Hello, everyone. My name is Margie Milam. I'm a Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives at ICANT, and it's a pleasure for me to welcome you to our webinar. The webinar is the answers to the top 10 questions about the proposed next generation registration directory services to replace WHOIS. Before we begin, I'd like to remind all the participants of some housekeeping items. This webinar is being recorded, so if you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. At the end of the webinar, you'll be given an opportunity to voice your comments and questions during the Q&A section. The EWG will receive a copy of the chat transcript. Please note that the chat sessions are being archived, and please follow the ICANT expected standards of behavior. Your lines are currently muted, and they will be open for the Q&A section. In the meantime, you're more than welcome to submit your questions and or your comments via the Adobe Connect chat pod. If you do not wish to voice your comments or questions during the Q&A, please mute your line by pressing star 6. To unmute your line, press star 7. The slides, the recording, and the transcript will be made available following the session on the announcement page. So today we will more deeply explore the key features of the proposed registry directory services, the foundation from which the community through the GNSO can develop a new global policy for GTLD registration data. This is to protect personal privacy and ensure greater accuracy, accountability, and transparency for the ICANT ecosystem. The goal of this webinar is to help you understand and ask any questions that you may have about how the proposed registration directory service, or the RDS as we call it, tackles some of the difficult issues such as data privacy issues, as well as validation challenges that have long degraded data quality and accuracy, and also the RDS tries to strike a balance between access and accountability. And so with that, we'll turn to Michaela Nalon, who will serve as a moderator today.
Thanks, Margie. Michaela Nalon. I will be attempting to moderate this session. So Margie's already given you the kind of ground rules about how we're recording this. If there's anything you wouldn't want to go on the record, then please don't say it or put it in the chat, because it's all going to be archived forever. Okay, so our agenda for this evening's webinar, basic introduction, then we're going to go through what have been highlighted as the top 10 questions that have been received about the final report and our proposals. After going through those links and to further resources, further reading, next steps, at which point we'll then have a Q&A session. So what exactly is the EWG? The EWG was formed towards the beginning of last year, at the beginning of 2013, and we were tasked with, as the slide says, you know, breaking a decade-long impasse around WHOIS and, you know, domain registration records of how that entire thing is handled. The EWG was made up with a broad group of people from the four corners of the globe with a lot of different expertise, a lot of different experiences, and we met both face-to-face, over the phone, and via email over about 16 months. If you read the report, I think we actually have statistics on the number of meetings, the number of phone calls, and a rough number of the number of emails that were exchanged throughout our work. The main thing that we were working on was the idea that we should be frank, honest, and, you know, work together as a group to try and break a deadlock. The report itself and our proposals, some may find quite drastic, but this is, we were asked not to simply fix a bunch of existing issues, but to actually go back to basics and, you know, come up with a range of solutions to address them. I mean, the ultimate question we were trying to answer was the question posed by the ICANN board: is there an alternative to today's solutions to better serve the global internet community? So, in the final report, we detailed a next-generation registration directory service. So at the sidecount, of course, we have an acronym, so it's RDS. And the idea, as Margie mentioned, is to strike the balance between accuracy, access, privacy, and accountability. And a key tenet of this is the idea of permissible purposes, so that the data that's collected is validated and disclosed for permissible purposes only. And of course, if you're handing over data to anybody, then you want that data to be safe, and so the idea of purpose-driven, gated access. If you read through the full report, we go into all of this in much greater detail. So now we're going to go through the top 10 questions that we've received, and so I'll hand over to Susan.
Thanks, Michele, and thanks all for joining us today. What makes the RDS different? Well, the WHOIS provides a one-size-fits-all public access to anonymous users, little accountability or abuse remedies, limited individual privacy protection or ability to conform to differing laws, limited ability to ensure data integrity, lack of security and auditing capabilities, cumbersome contact management, and inefficient communication. We looked at all of these points and tried to design and recommend a system that would address these issues. With the RDS, there would be limited anonymous access. You would have to tell the RDS who you are and why you need the data. We could also we can also provide a jurisdictional rules engine so that we can comply with all the applicable laws around the globe. Validating and auditing of the data would be validating of the data and accuracy of the data, and auditing of the use of the data would be much easier in this system. Also, the contact management would be made easier for registrants. You could set up one set of data, and you could use that universally. In general, we've addressed all these issues and provided a new system for the WHOIS. On to slide 2.
So the question here is, did the EWG choose a centralized model for the RDS? The EWG chose a synchronized model, not necessarily a centralized model. And the reason for that is, for the EWG, the term centralized is somewhat of a misnomer, so it was renamed to synchronized. The centralized implied storage of all of the data in one place with one database, housing all the information. And really based on the discussions and the study that was conducted by IBM, I mean, it was clear that the data would be housed in multiple locations and then parsed out into multiple databases. And it was also clear that information pulled from all the disparate sources would be synchronized with the information from the RDS, hence the term synchronized. And so when you're looking at this slide, and when you read the report, the EWG analyzed a number of models, and each of the models differed in how the data was queried or copied into the RDS, and we looked at the current WHIS, we looked at the federated model, synchronized, regional, opt-out, and bypass, all of those that are here, and they're all kind of fleshed out more in the report. Many of these models came from the community itself, and the key for the EWG in analyzing all of this was that the RDS had to remain the authoritative source that provided authenticated, gated, and logged access to all the information. And so then we also looked at a set of criteria that included a number of factors as we were looking at each of the different models. For example, what were the security implications for each of the models? We looked at jurisdictional privacy concerns, implementation, operations issues, accreditation requirements, obviously a couple of different models for that, the federated and the synchronized, and that's where the IBM study came into play. and we felt that we definitely needed to look at some of the costs over attendance to those two models, which is what IBM did, and then they released their report, the implementation model cost analysis report, I believe. And based on that study, we recommended the conclusion that we had arrived in our analysis, we recommended the synchronized model. I think we're on to the next slide, right?
Okay, so the next question is, does the RDS eliminate free public access to data? And the short answer is no, it doesn't. Some registration data would remain public to unauthenticated requesters, so that's everybody, the grand public, as they say in French, to promote internet stability and meet basic DNS needs. So it would be available for any permissible purposes without authentication. And what is available would depend on what data protection regime would be in place, what you have as a domain holder have chosen to release, and various other factors. So it's a bit more complicated than it is now, but it doesn't get rid of the fundamental data that everybody needs to find out what's going on and to solve technical issues. I think we're on to the next slide.
Hi, my name is Scott Hollenbeck. And the question addressed on this slide is, what would I need to do to access gated RDS data? Now, the concept of gated data is new. It doesn't exist in WHOIS, but it addresses our needs to protect privacy and ensure that data is collected and disclosed only for permissible purposes. If you look at the slide, you'll see where we talk about gated queries, a requester must be accredited and obtain a requester ID. Now, that's a new concept. In addition to the data that is freely available to unauthenticated, sometimes thought of as anonymous users, in the RDS we introduce a concept of authenticated users who actually have credentials that can be presented to gain access to gated data. Requesters must first work with an accreditor to document who they are and what their permissible purposes are, and assuming certain metrics are met, they will be given credentials. They send a query to the RDS where they are presenting their credentials and their purposes, and if everything checks out, they'll be given access to the public data plus the gated data for which their purpose has been validated. Okay. Next slide.
Hi, this is Susan again. What new data will the RDS collect? Not much new data. As you can see in the first chart, that's the existing WHOIS record. You're collecting the admin, the tech, the contact data, the registrant data, and then all of the data supplied to the register and registry. We will be collecting purpose-based contact data, so you can designate a technical contact or a legal contact, an abuse contact, and we will be collecting all of that data associated with this domain registration. But most of the data is gated. For general working of the domain name system, the registry and the registrar data will still be available anonymously. You can look that up. But the only thing available anonymously, without telling the RDS who you are or why you need the data, will be the registrant ID associated with the domain name registration and their email address. You would not receive the actual name of the registrant unless the registrant wanted to make that available anonymously. All of the rest of the data, the registrant contact data, any new optional data elements such as SMS or your LinkedIn profile, Twitter, handle, Facebook page, those would all be dated, along with the designated TBCs, which could be yourself or a third party, that purpose-based contact. All of that will be dated. You can see by the little gray hash marks there. And it will require the validated and credentialed access. And we are on to the next slide with Lon Ray.
Yes, this is Lon Ray. Thank you, Susan. This slide is addressing contacts and contact ID. So what are contacts and what are contact ID? Contacts are simply blocks of contact data. They are reusable, and they are linked to domains by contact ID. The contact IDs are generally public. They are available for general access. But the contact data are largely gated. In most cases, they are gated. The contact ID is available for everyone. And that's basically the difference between the contact and the contact ID. And to improve that accountability and reachability, it is important that we make the registrant contact mandatory for every domain. So every domain must have registrant contacts, it must have admin contacts, it must have technical contacts, abuse contacts, and legal contacts. But business contacts is optional. Privacy and privacy provider contacts is only applicable when a registrant is using a PPP provider. That's essentially about a contact and contact ID. Can I have next slide, please? Okay. Next slide is how would RDS improve data quality? The RDS gives registrants and contact holders a lot of control over their personal data. And this makes it, this inclines the registrants to give accurate data. Because they know they have control over their data, they can choose whether to make their data public in some cases or gated in some other cases. So because they know they have control over their data, they are more inclined to give accurate data, thereby improving data quality. Also in the RDS, there is this concept of gated access. And because you know most of your sensitive data is gated, the registrants are also more inclined to supply accurate data to the system, thereby improving data quality. And more importantly, every data submitted are subjected to some kind of validation. Standard validation is applicable to all data. Whereas identity validation is optional. I'd like to take you through the diagram here to see the validation flow. Let's take a particular data element, which is an email, and the email in this particular case is a z@IFC. That particular data element is submitted for validation. The system will check if that email is emphatically valid. If it is valid, that is, the name is looking like an email address, then it is passed to the second validation. If it is not, an error message is sent to the registrant. The system goes through operational validation to check if the email can actually be sent, if an email can actually be sent to that particular email address. So if the data element passes operational validation, it goes through the next stage. And the next stage is to determine whether the registrant requires identity validation. If the registrant does not want identity validation, then the cycle is completed. The registrant is assigned the contact ID and issued the credential, and that information is stored in contact database. So that's the process. The important thing there is that every data element is subjected to validation processes, and that roughly enhances the data quality of the RDS. Thank you. So I think the next presenter is starting.
Actually, it's Stephanie.
Okay, it's Stephanie again, and basically just to explain the kind of trade-offs that are made here in terms of privacy and data quality, the criticism over the last umpteen years has been that everything's wide open, but the data quality is not there. As you can tell from what Lanre said, we are seriously ratcheting up the reliability of the data by doing data verification. And the more or less the price for that is stronger fences around personal data and more choice in terms of releasing personal data. So basically this concept of a rules engine which would enforce the RDS policy, harmonize it with existing data protection and privacy laws, and you will notice there's also a recommendation in our report that I can look at a privacy policy to cover the entire RDS system, so that basically this engine would enforce the protection of personal data that ought to be available only with appropriate documentation and identification of the requester. So that's a kind of a little word about that that system and how the gate would be enforced. It also supports accredited privacy proxy services, so that if you still wish to protect all of your data, you can purchase an accredited privacy proxy service that will then put its data into the RDS. And finally, just a note that we did make a recommendation for providing greater protection for persons at risk, for persons who, in certain categories, who are possibly going to be hurt if their name and address are associated with the domain that they have registered. So we're talking about journalists and political speech and that sort of thing. And so we have proposed a system for obtaining domain names anonymously. That's the Secure Protected Credentials system. So that's just a word on that. And on to the next slide.
So this is Carlton Samuel, and we want to talk about how the RDS makes life simpler for individual registrants. You'd be pleased to know we did not ignore the compelling interests of registrants. As a rule in the RDS, registrants will have more visibility into what their data is used for, based on the fact that we will record the uses of the data and it has to be qualified for you to get access to it. They will have the ability to enter and update their data more easily, and they certainly will have more flexibility and control over what data is public. Stephanie just spoke to you about the balancing act the EWG went into to ensure that the data quality and the privacy and all of availability and access all these are managed in such a way that there's some control by the registrant of what actually gets public. It's important to have options for fraudulent use of their data, and this feeds nicely into the purposeful requirement for access to RDS. And it's also easy to track because you have one place to see what RDS users can learn about them. So you have a question of not only knowing what you put up, but to see who's using what you've put up. So all in all, there's greater assurance that the privacy, data protection, security, and auditing policies that we are contemplating in this new dispensation will be uniformly applied. We have access to data which will be limited to those who have a need to know. And we have some accountability framework for requesters who are making access to RDS data. It all in all comes out to a simpler life for individual registrants. So we'll move to the next slide.
Thanks, Carlton. Michaela again. So the question, another question we've been asked is, what about the impact on both registrar and registry costs? So this is something that we've discussed at length and there have been quite a few questions about. The first thing that we discussed and decided is that the RDS needs to be run on a purely cost recovery basis. In other words, it shouldn't be used as some way to generate revenue. It should be run in such a way that it covers its own costs and nothing more. Since the introduction of the 2013 Registrar Accreditation Agreement, there has been a greater burden placed on registrars and in some cases on registries around the validation of who is contact data. With this new model that we are proposing, that GTLD registrars would no longer be obligated to collect or to validate the who is contact data. The idea would be that you'd shift all of that over to validators, so that they would deal with the contact validation, they would deal with the compliance, and they would have to deal with any and all data protection issues around that data. So this would mean that on the registrar side, the focus would be more firmly based on the DNS-related bits, I mean, the more technical aspects of it. With respect to registries, the same kind of thing applies because they would no longer have to receive or to disclose the who is contact data, and the storage and the processing would all move over to the validators, as previously mentioned. The port 43 and port 80, who is obligations, would then shift to the synchronized RDS. And registries would use EPP to supply updates to the SRDS. And obviously the same would apply, same could be same for set for registrars. And now I'll pass you over to Faisal.
Hello, this is Faisal Shah. So the next question is, how would the RDS address who was and reverse who is needs? So there were a number of business use cases that we discussed in the EWG that involved the provision of a reverse who is and who was data services. And really based on these discussions, the EWG recommended that the RDS allow for reverse who is and who was queries and also work with third parties to provide this type of information. I mean, so in essence, in addition to the ordinary queries that you would see from the RDS, you would also be able to run who is queries from the public and the gated elements across all the GTLDs and the who was queries for historical information to the system itself, so long as you abide by the strict RDS policy guidelines, right? So you have to abide by the accreditation and then the authentication, et cetera. And then you can also get the information from certain approved third parties. I mean, you know, I think we felt that, you know, these, you know, every third parties could also, you know, these providers might be able to come up with innovative ways of presenting this information, which would be welcome. The caveat, of course, is that even the information from third parties would also have to meet the policies that would be set out by the RDS for accessing the information. So in other words, users would still need to be authenticated and accredited, and whatever information provided would still need to be purpose-based. And on to the next slide. I think that's for Kelly.
Thank you, Faisal. Okay, so if you want to learn more about the RDS and the EWG's report, here are a load of URLs that you're not going to remember, but don't worry, all these links and everything else will be made available afterwards. So we've got the full report, which is a big piece of work. If you're into the environment, don't print it, it's very long. The FAQs, and of course the several videos where some of us may have answered some of these questions for you. The next steps, the ICANN board is currently considering how they want to handle things. The nature of the EWG's work is probably a little bit different within the ICANN ecosystem. The mandate came from the ICANN board and CEO. So anything that comes out of it would have to be channeled back into the GNSO and the normal policy development process. So the ICANN board is currently considering that. I believe it's on the Monday at ICANN 51 in LA. There's a session in the afternoon, I believe around 3 o'clock. Margie or somebody can confirm the time, which will be related to all things WHO is, which obviously will encompass our work. Of course, if you're interested in providing any feedback or contributing ideas, please do come along to the session in LA, either in person or remotely. And at this juncture, we will open things up to the floor if anybody has questions. Oh, sorry, I've just been told that the time for the Monday session hasn't been finalized, but it is on Monday, as far as I know. I've got one question on the chat from CK. Would registrants be able to know who is requesting to view their gated contact details and what process would be followed to obtain that information? So I'll hand that one over to Stephanie.
You can hand it over, Michele, but I'm not entirely certain that I have the answer. In the case of law enforcement, for instance, they may have an ability to request under their legal system that the investigated person not be aware that their data has been distributed. All of that is dealt with under data protection law in the different regimes. The point of actually having a harmonized policy is to make sure that there's a certain amount of fundamental fairness that crosses across the entire ecosystem and to simplify matters. So there would have to be procedures developed in terms of when an individual gets to know that their data is being accessed and when they don't. I hope that answers the question.
Thanks, Stephanie. Does anybody else want to speak to this one?
Yes,
listen-only mode is now off.
This is Carlton.
Go ahead, Carlton.
Yes, the RDS, the contemplation is that the RDS will log all requests for that data, and presumably the policy will enable the registrant to look at all of those requests. Eventually.
Okay, thank you, Carlton. I've got two more questions in the chat. One from Elaine Priest. Elaine. Are you planning on A/B testing during the registration path, seeing how the interruption of validation affects completion? Scott or somebody would like to take that one, maybe?
Yeah, sure. Scott Hollenbeck here. I think the long and short of it is that it's a little bit too early to say for sure what plans we have for development and deployment, because the EWG isn't doing development and deployment. That will ultimately be something that has to be addressed during the policy development process and, you know, and in terms of whatever types of statement of work is prepared, you know, for the contractors and the folks who actually do the implementation. However, having said that, what you described is absolutely best engineering practice, and we would definitely need to make sure, or someone would need to make sure, that such testing takes place.
Okay, thank you. I also have another question in the chat from Liam Kenny. Are you able to explain how you define permissible purposes and give an indication of what they are? I'll give this one over to Faisal.
Well, I think the permissible purposes, I mean, I think we've they're defined in the report itself. And so we have, I think there's a list of 11 different purposes that that we've actually set out. I don't have them in front of me, but I think that it's a you know, quick reading of the report will actually provide that to you.
Thank you, Faisal. Chuck Gomes, go ahead.
Thanks. Michaela and everyone else. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, perfect.
Yep.
Good. Okay. Appreciate that. I have a couple questions. I'll probably ask them at different times because they're quite different. First of all, with regard to the next steps, you talk about the session in L.A. on Monday. Will the working, the expert working group provide some suggested breakouts of how PDPs might be broken out for realistic work? I know we've, in discussions with you earlier, you have expressed the willingness to help the GNSO do that. Is the work in LA going to be from scratch, or is the working group going to provide some guidelines in that regard going into that session?
Okay, thanks, Chuck. I'm going to pick on Margie, actually, on this one.
Sure, this is Margie Milam on staff. The Monday session is meant to be more high level. I don't think it's going to go into how to break out the subject. It's more about how the expert working group report and recommendations fit into the future of the whole registration directory services and how to structure it within the GNSO. So it's not, it won't go that deep. And I know that the expert working group hasn't really explored that issue either as to how you would break it up in a policy development process.
Thank you, Marge.
Michaela, this is Susan. I just want to add on. Personally, as a member of the EWG, I would welcome the opportunity to give some guidance. So if the board comes back or the GNSO comes back to us and asks, you know, for some input, we'd be happy to do that.
This is Carlton. Can I just say plus one to Suzanne? I would also want to point people to what is happening in the CPSIA working group, where we are looking at the Paris Trust framework and suggest that maybe that is a way for us to break up the work and treat it in a fashion that would probably make sense to you, Chuck, in what you might pick up in the GNSO.
This is Chuck. Can I do follow-up on that?
Okay, I'll allow you, Chuck.
Thanks, Michaela. I appreciate it. It seems to me that we're kind of doing things in a serial manner that is going to slow down what is already going to be a very huge task in terms of policy development. And maybe it's hung up with the board. I don't know what the case is. But we know that the GNSO is going to need some help from the working group in terms of designing very probably multiple PDPs on this. So, and I know this isn't your responsibility, but I guess I'm just communicating a point here that maybe staff can kind of nudge the board and see if we can't get the working group, who I'm hearing you all say you're willing, to start working on that rather than waiting until the board makes some decision and then having you do it and then going to the GNSO and working with the GNSO. We got a lot of work in front of us, and it seems like some of these things could be speeded up if we weren't too hung up in terms of successive steps. And I don't know that you want, you can respond if you want. That's just a suggestion on my part, and it may be one for the board more so than you guys, but I thought it'd be important to make it.
Thanks, Chuck. And Denise has something to add, and then I'll go to Stephanie.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. Thanks, Chuck, for your insightful contributions. Similar conversations have been occurring at the board level. The board, in fact, just recently agreed that it would be great to have a more in-depth discussion with GNSO reps on this very subject to make sure that there's a clear understanding and collaboration on the best way to move forward with this PDP. So certainly look to LA, and additional information will be showing up on email shortly, I'm sure, regarding getting some people together to discuss this further and provide some more ideas for further GNSO and GNSO Council discussion.
Thanks, Denise.
Okay, Stephanie, and then I'm going back to the queue.
Yeah, just briefly, I think that Chuck's question is an excellent question. We did discuss this a lot over the year and a half. We were working on the EWG report because, as I'm sure you're aware, this is a whole lot of nested policy development, and you don't want it running serially. On the other hand, coordination will be challenging because you can't move in on getting very accurate data, in my opinion, of course, being the privacy advocate here, without making sure the privacy is moving at the same pace. So how to coordinate that is a real problem, even worse than the regular ICANN columns, the coordination issue. So just throwing that in.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. Elaine had a follow-up question. Is it the plan to cause validation during the purchase path, or must a registrant have that validation before they try to register, or have we not thought of that yet? Scott, I'll give this one to you.
Sure. Hi, Scott Hollenbeck again. Yes, we've definitely thought about this because the whole topic of validation, you know, is new, and we know that it's been a very significant issue for many, many years. To answer the question in a nutshell, though, the idea is that details will be validated outside of and prior to the purchase path, and that's largely because there are some data elements that would be very difficult to validate in real time. So, for example, if you're trying to determine that a postal address is valid, well, one way you could validate it would be to try to send a message and see if it gets bounced back or not. And then I realize that's probably a bad example, but hopefully it gives you the idea. So, again, long and short, validation happens before the purchase path is entered, and the registrants would be able to reference and use data that has been pre-validated.
Okay, thank you, Scott. The next question we have is from Jim Prendergast. The accrediting agency for access to gated data, do you have an estimate on the cost associated with that and who pays for it, and how long is the accreditation valid for? For that one, I think I'll go to Faisal.
So, I mean, I think IBM kind of looked at all the different costings around this. don't recall whether or not they had an estimate on the associated with the cost for the access to the gated, for the accredited agency and what the access to. I mean, at the end of the day, I think one of the things that we're really trying to encourage is that all these costs don't get pushed back to the registrar. I mean, I think our whole goal was that we're going to try, you know, if there are ways of doing it, we're going to try to actually make this so that it's cost recovery and, you know, zero cost back to the registrar. So, I mean, at the end of the day, if this is something that the RDS can actually take on, the burden they actually take on, well, so that's kind of what we are looking for the RDS to do.
Okay, thanks, Faisal. The next the next question was from Sintra Suknanam. Sorry if I mispronounced that. There is a gap between this system and the CCTLD RIS. Are there any plans to transition or to encourage transition of CCTLD RIS to the RDS? And this one's for Scott.
Hi, Scott Hollenbeck again. And while I can't talk to plans to transition or encourage transition, I can certainly talk to how RDAP, the Registration Data Access Protocol that's described in the final report, works and how it could help work in a model where either CCTLD data is included in the RDS or if it's not. If we assume that the RDS and CCTLDs both eventually implement and deploy RDAP, RDAP includes the ability to do referrals via HTTP. And so if the data in a CCTLD registry happens to reside outside the RDS, it would be perfectly feasible for the RDS to recognize when it receives a query for a CCTLD data element, issue an HTTP redirect to the CCTLD registry operator, and from the client's perspective, it would all look well and good.
This is Faisal. I'd like to kind of add to that, Scott. I mean, I think it would also seem like from an implementation standpoint, we would probably focus first on getting the structure set up with the GTLDs and then have that implemented with the CCTLDs, and maybe at some point start off with some of the smaller CCTLDs and go from there. But I think initially it kind of wasn't, you know, I think you almost have to take this in steps as opposed to trying to you know, take over the whole thing.
The point to emphasize, though, is that there's no technical disability to include CCTLD who is data under the umbrella of the RDS.
Okay, thank you, Carlton. Just also my own, taking my hat as moderator off, Jacinta's question. This entire project is focused on GTLDs, and ICANN has no remit over how CCTLDs handle WHOIS data or how they publish it or don't publish it. So while it might make sense at one level that CCTLDs do something similar with WHOIS data, there's zero obligation for them to do so, nor would we be in a position to force them into doing anything. Thanks. Any further questions? Or have I missed one? Quite possible. Chuck again.
Thanks. Sorry,
Chuck, just one moment, please. For anybody else on the call, your lines have been unmuted. So if you get tired of hearing Chuck Gomes' voice, you can also put up your hand. Please, Chuck, continue.
Are you tired yet, Michaela, of hearing me?
No, you're fine. Don't worry.
kind of following up what the questions by Elaine and Jim on the registration process, and you answered part of the question in the sense that it's anticipated that a registrant would first have their data validated through the validator. You talked early on about the costs of that, and those costs would be dealt with not by registries and registrars, but by that would be handled through the validation process. And this may be a policy question that has to still be developed, but I'll ask it anyway. Are you envisioning the registrant then paying a fee to the validator to have their data validated, or is the thinking more that that would be a subsidized cost through through the ICANN budget? And you may not even be able to answer that, but it's kind of in follow-up to the other things that have been said about the registration process, the validation process, the validator, and so forth. Any response, thoughts you have there would be appreciated.
Thank you, Chuck.
So this is Faisal. I mean, I think that, Chuck, I think that from my perspective, it would be something that would, at least we would envision not, I guess it would all depend, and I think we still have to go through the whole analysis of how this would all work, but certainly I would like to see it more on the subsidized side versus pushing all that back down to the registrant.
Thank you, Faisal. Anybody else want to jump in on this one? Just Michele, just as a kind of a note on the point, Chuck. In the case of, say, .XXX that had a validation system, and there's a few of the currently launching TLDs with extra validation built in, and if you even look at some of the existing ones, such as .travel, that the costs of validation are built into the registration fees. I mean, there's all sorts of different options that could be explored here, but I don't think we ever envisioned any scenario in which a registrant would end up having to pay an extra fee on top of whatever they'd be paying for the domain registration.
Right.
Thanks.
Further questions? Go ahead.
That's just my mic showing. That's not a hand raise.
Oh, okay. No problem. Okay. Any further questions for us? Or shall I give you all back half an hour?
So this is Margie. If there's no further questions, this will conclude the webinar. I wanted to remind you that we will have the recordings and the slides and the transcripts that we've made available so that you can refer back to it if you'd like. Thank you all for participating and for joining us at this time.
Okay, thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye. See you.